WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's Friday, so you know what time it is. It's our weekly news recap where we catch you up on the biggest state and local stories that you might have missed but need to know about. From record-breaking temperatures.
Blazing sun trapping the heat. It's called the heat dome, and it's what we're experiencing in Chicago right now.
To political shakeups.
The chair of the Illinois Republican Party will be stepping down.
To break down these top stories and more, I sat down with a panel of local journalists. Jacoby Cochran, host of CityCast Chicago, a daily podcast and newsletter. Dan Mihalopoulos, a WBEZ investigative reporter on government and politics. And Tonya Hill, a multimedia reporter for The Tribe. I started off by asking what everyone did to stay safe and cool in this week's harsh heat. Here's Tonya.
Drinking lots of water and staying.
Oh, you remember to drink water.
I do.
Because yeah. I didn't.
Yeah, I like to drink a lot of water. So drinking water and also just staying under the AC as much as possible.
Yes, the AC was critical this week. What about you, Jacoby? Were you out and about?
Slightly colder showers. I was in the pool this week.
Okay.
I did go outside, but I made sure I had my water bottle with me anytime I stepped outside for too long, whether I was on a bike, whether I was walking. But I did get outside this week, even though the temperatures got up there.
Yeah, I wasn't kidding. Like, I had too many instances where I was like, oh, where's my bottle of water? I should have brought my bottle of water. So luckily, just in time for the heat wave, you mentioned pools, Jacoby. The city's 77 pools officially opened on Monday, and Humboldt Park Beach, which is the city's only inland beach, opened for the first time in 4 years. We're going to talk more about pools in a moment, but I got to jump to this. Your colleague, Tonya, at The Tribe wrote a story about two Black boating events in Chicago this summer. Tell us more about those.
Sure. So the first of the two were held last weekend, so Juneteenth weekend. So that's the fourth annual Black Yacht Weekend, and it was their first time holding it around Juneteenth. So it's really just an opportunity for people just to gather, be themselves, have fun. And it's just also a really beautiful scene.
So it's a meetup at the Playpen?
It's a meetup at the Playpen, yeah.
Which I've never been to.
Me either.
Oh, really? Have you?
Admittedly,
I've seen it
from a distance.
From the beach.
From the beach.
I haven't been out there, though.
Okay.
Yeah, that's on my bucket list.
Exactly,
yeah,
right?
I need to get a friend that has a boat to actually get
out there. I've been waiting to get a friend with a boat.
I love these events, though.
So the other is Black Scene Weekend. That's July 19th and 20th. Is that right?
Yeah, through the 21st.
Okay.
And I just want to add, like, last year, the organizers that talked to Jerome, who wrote the story, said there were, like, 200 boats out there last year. So they're
That's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah. So they're hoping that they'll reach up to 240. And they did share that a lot of the people that are coming in are from out of town. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. So, oh, my goodness. We're talking about pools and the heat and beaches. I mean, how did you beat the heat this week?
You know what? I kind of am trying to lean into it and
did you
sweat off some pounds?
Well, you know what? Over the last few years, you have actually done a lot of work investigating the city's lifeguard program, right? In recent summers, there's been this shortage. So does it seem like they've filled the jobs this summer?
Well, that's what the Park District says. And they said that they made some efforts to advertise, which they've done in previous years also. You know, there was this nationwide shortage. There's a labor shortage overall, and particularly finding qualified lifeguards. They've had a hard time. But they started a program where there were some sort of basically younger explorers, as they call them. They helped them pass the test, and they say that there are enough certified lifeguards now that for the first time in a few years, for the first time probably since before the pandemic, they can open up all the pools and beaches.
So you would say that the Park District has made significant changes then to how they've they're running the program?
Well, if you mean have they made significant changes to avoid the sorts of things that happened in the past, meaning widespread sexual harassment, abuse, and even assault of primarily, you know, girls and young women, mm-hmm. that's a huge question. You would hope that, you know, that was the goal of the women that came forward mm-hmm. for it not to happen again. And you would hope that the attention alone would be enough. But as you said, there have to be structural changes, too. They have created some new, you know, I guess, office within the Park District to deal with these sorts of issues. My reporting shows that it's kind of, well, it's not very transparent. Yeah. It's kind of opaque the way it's set up, which is often what government will do and others. So it's hard to be sure, but definitely if you're out there and anything untoward is happening, a lot of people, this is their first job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Know that that's not right and know that you should be able to raise the alarm at your workplace. Mm-hmm. And we're here for you, too. So you can contact us.
Yeah. One positive change over last summer is the city's pools will be open 6 days a week instead of five. Jacoby, this is it's typically been a popular summer job, as we know, for local teens. Mm-hmm. You think parents are feeling comfortable that their teens are working in a safe environment now?
I would hope that with leadership changes, with the different ways that the program and the recruitment goes, that parents and young people alike feel safer. But as Dan and I have talked about this over the years, there are, in some cases, more options for young people instead of sitting out in the exact heat that we are complaining about, you know, worried about potentially having to save the life of another Chicagoan. And so I think making the job more attractive, making the job safer for young mm-hmm. people has to be the goal of the Park District, because we need these people so that we can have access to these basic resources across the city. And so my hope is that they've made those changes.
Yeah.
And we'll see by the end of the summer, you know, how well they were able
Absolutely.
To do this.
Yeah, I mean, to that end, over the last week, there have been multiple drownings and rescues in Lake Michigan, including a man who fell into the water in the popular playpen area that we were just talking about moments ago. One thing I've heard often, as I mentioned, I haven't been, but I've heard how unsafe it can be.
Yeah.
You're nodding, Tonya.
Yeah, I've heard that. I actually saw a TikTok video of someone who was out there, and she was mentioning how just like the water at the lake, it seems like something you could be able to swim in, but the conditions of the water, the waves were really choppy. Mm-hmm. So, and just talking about how everyone that was in that area really tried to help and figure out like where that man had fallen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you bring hundreds of boats out, no matter how safely you do it, all your captains are licensed, even if you control alcohol, drugs, everything to your best of your ability, still the majority of people out there, whether they can swim or they can't swim, are vulnerable to the risk out there. Any wrong thing happens. In this story, from what I've heard thus mm-hmm. far, the person may have just slipped into the water and been pulled under. I mean, some of the drowning stories that we've seen, not only this summer, but every summer, happens with people who would consider themselves strong swimmers.
Right.
And people got to remember, the lake, they don't care about that.
It does not. And you
There's
know,
nothing to
and
play with.
Yeah.
There's ships under the water at the bottom of that lake.
And that's right.
It's the Great Lakes, you know, it's the Third Coast. It's an inland sea. It's probably the largest really inland sea in the world when you put all the Great Lakes together. And it's not at all something to play with. It may not seem as intimidating on certain days, but there are all sorts of currents and undertows that mm-hmm. I couldn't begin to explain. But people who are very strong swimmers know to respect the lake. And a lot of times maybe it's people that don't get that might get into trouble.
Yeah, we recently did a segment on the program with a water safety expert, and it was so alarming as he sort of talked about all the things that you need to know. And he was like, most Americans actually, we think we can swim, but we actually can't. We think we're swimming, but we're really like treading water, right? Yeah. We're really just waiting. So,
and it's not to scare people from taking advantage of Lake Michigan or the river. I love that we started off talking about these Black boating weekends, because I know too many of my homies growing up on the South Side that never went to the lake, never went to the river, don't have a sense of how big it is. And so having these events that remind us that it's not only for tourists, it's not only for people who have means to get on a boat.
Right.
It's for all of us, but let's make sure we're they're swimming in designated areas where there are visible lifeguards, that we're using as many flotation devices as possible, that we're not gathering in ways that make it dangerous for yes. people on boats or people in the water.
And very important that even the strongest of swimmers can still drown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So cooling centers, as we know, were another way for folks to beat the heat this week. But Wednesday, as the temperatures were in the 90s, cooling centers were closed in honor of Juneteenth. Now, since it was a federal holiday, now that meant libraries were also closed. Did that kind of put the city in a bind, Jacoby?
Yeah, it really did. This is one of those moments in which, when I first heard it, I understood that when we're talking about holidays, people want those days off. People, don't get holidays off, like working on a Christmas or a Thanksgiving or a Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult for a person. It can take them away from celebrations, take them away from families. But when we're talking about staffing critical resources for some of the most vulnerable Chicagoans, we have to have the foresight to look ahead. And I get the weather is not something any of us in this room or anyone who's even like a weather person can truly predict.
Right.
But you have to make sure that these places are full staffed. You can't be hit from all sides with your cooling centers, your libraries, your community centers, all of these
Everything shut down
at the same time, you know, leaving people to, you know, maybe, you know, take themselves to the beach or to the park. And you know, that's just difficult on folks.
Yeah. Luckily, 106 Park District buildings were open for people to come in and cool down. Tonya, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson was also honoring Juneteenth. Now, at an event raising the Juneteenth flag at Daley Plaza, he signed an executive order establishing a reparations task force. What exactly is in this executive order?
Sure. So the reparations task force is formed, like you mentioned, the executive order. But the goal is to create a Black reparations agenda. And in the executive order, some of the things that I think are important to highlight is that there is acknowledgement of all these different discriminatory practices that Black people have experienced, from slavery to Jim Crow to just post-civil rights era, mm-hmm. Going back, thinking about like Black laws, how when the city was creating the interstates, 94, 55, all mm-hmm. of these were in predominantly Black neighborhoods and they were displaced from these areas in order for us to have these interstates. Public housing, how there's all of these different public housing projects that were open, thinking about Cabrini Green, the Robert Taylor homes that were demolished, and these people, predominantly Black and Brown, were told that they could come back.
Yeah.
And the city did not fulfill that promise.
The order also includes a public apology from the city, quote, for the historical wrongs committed against Black Chicagoans and their ancestors who have and continue to bear injustices. Did the mayor outline any more goals for this task force, Tonya?
He mentioned wanting to really have community insight over this process, because this isn't, as he told me, just something that is of his vision. He wants it to be emblematic of the city of Chicago, of Black Chicagoans. So having this task force, which will include community members, and some, I hope that there's so many Black people that have been working on reparations, like Cam Howard, for decades. Mm-hmm. So I hope that they'll have a seat at the table and try to come up with some actual recommendations to get us to actually implementing some things. Mm-hmm. Jacoby and I were talking about this yesterday on CityCast, but we've seen study after study after study, and we all really know the harms that Black Chicagoans have been, you know, suffered through. So we just hope that this leads to
time for some action.
Yeah, some action.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dan, we should remind listeners that the mayor actually announced plans to create a reparations committee last November. It was supposed to have started its work on January 1st. Are you surprised that we're just now seeing an executive order signed?
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of action last year on Juneteenth with the opening by the mayor. It was the first Juneteenth when he was in office, of the memorial toward people for people who have survived the torture of John Burge and others. Mm-hmm. Those are very important things, but you would think that this is as important when you consider what his promises were. It's not an easy thing to do. It's been talked about for a very, very long time, long before he became the mayor, in all fairness, in his defense. But yeah, there are going to be people that felt that they voted for a mayor who's going to be very different from previous mayors, or most previous mayors at least. And it can't happen fast enough for them. And Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question to say why it hasn't happened faster.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Jacoby, about the lack of progress on this issue?
At least from the Johnson administration, I will give him, coming into office, there are a lot of pressing issues of immediate concern that his administration kind of hit the ground working on. To what success, we could be here all day to talk about that. But as Tonya pointed out, and we talked about on CityCast Chicago, a task force to create an agenda to maybe get implemented down the road is something that doesn't give me a lot of confidence. But what I do like is that this conversation is happening in the mainstream. Some of the people that Tonya spoke with, like Michelle Rashad, the executive director of Imagine Inglewood, Valerie Hall, a longtime Southsider, they had different ideas of what reparations should look like. Valerie talked about more senior programs, guaranteed income programs for Black seniors. Michelle talked about access to free education and free health care. I'm for all of the above, direct cash payments and the like. There is no topic, industry, segment of Chicago, aspect of human life that Black people have not been robbed of and degraded from, whether it's housing, education, access to health care. And so one thing I challenge the Johnson administration to do is not bring forth projects that should have, like, oh, I'm going to put a community center here. That's part of the reparation. No, that community center should have already been there.
Right.
So unless we're talking about tangible programs that provide direct access to people who are descendants of enslaved African Americans, enslaved Black folks, then I'm not really interested in just sort of
grandfathering
other social initiatives into this program. So I want things to be clear cut and to have real movement. But I'm not shocked at the pace.
Chicago's not the only one exploring reparations. The state is also launching a reparations commission. Its first public hearing is on the 13th of July at Kennedy King College on the South Side. Other municipalities and states are also looking into this. Now, Tonya, did you get any sense from the mayor about any kind of timeline here when we might see next steps?
Sure. So as outlined in the executive order, there are some dates or time frame around what things need to be moving. So one thing that I thought was interesting at the time of when this executive order was signed, by the 1 year mark, a report is supposed to be public of all these recommendations.
Okay.
So that would be something I would really be looking into, like, does it fulfill this promise of like meeting the year guideline? And then just looking at what happened, you know, at the previous administration where that group only met twice, you know, so is there really still this interest, you know, not just from the mayor, but like our Black alders, you know, to actually like put forth these recommendations to make things happen. But you also mentioned other municipalities. So I wanted to highlight like Evanston, you know, being the first to have a reparations program. And now it's being sued by a conservative
already
group.
Getting legal challenges.
Yeah. So I definitely wondered, and I did ask like Cam Howard this question of, you know, do you still feel like there's an appetite for this type of transformation, considering that there is white backlash happening now with what's going on in Evanston, with we're seeing at the Supreme Court with affirmative action. So they're coming after diversity and inclusion programs. And he said, he said he feels like this, we've had more of a political will to kind of push these things forward. We've had more support than we ever seen before at the elected leader level.
Wow. At the same time, the same celebration, rather, that was honoring Juneteenth, Jacoby, the mayor introduced his new chief equity officer. What should we know about Carla Coupe?
Carla Coupe had spent time not only at her own law firm since 2022, but has worked in public service as the DEI leader for the Chicago's Office of the Inspector General, spent many years in the Chicago Law Department. I think it is important that as DEI efforts, you know, one of those acronyms that really scares conservatives, similar to like CRT, maybe even COPA for folks, like, you know, people are pushing back against what are, in my idea, sort of basic common sense practices to make sure that our offices, at the least, uphold respecting people's identity, bringing people into the conversation, hiring people based on their abilities, not discriminating against people in the workplace. The fact that we are now at a place where it feels like we are sort of in a PR reimagining of what it means to be inclusive and that people have latched on to DEI. I appreciate that the mayor is not running away from this terminology, not running away from this office. I am, like with all offices, what is it possible to legislate out the worst of human beings? Because at the heart of this these efforts is to ask people to be less terrible, to ask people to be more informed about the vastness of what it means to be a human being, to treat people with dignity in the workplace. And again, at the least, to just shut your mouth and mind your business. Yeah. And so I am glad to see that the city has someone that they can turn to, and there's someone we can look at for strategy moving forward. But, you know, all reform efforts make me skeptical, because what does it mean to simply have someone in a position to say, hey, you shouldn't be doing that? You know, I don't think these types of offices are going to convince people who already want to discriminate to stop.
Okay, folks, time for an update on what our esteemed alders at City Council are up to. Let's start with 17th Ward Alderman David Moore. Now, he had to end his two-day protest campout. What was this about, Tonya?
So as David Moore was out camping out, he announced this last week, and he wants the violence to stop. And the area that he is camping out in is 73rd place between Racine and Ada, and he is calling it an open air drug market. So he said his final straw was the death of 18-year-old Trinity Boswell, who was killed near 72nd and Ada. Mm-hmm. But he's hoping, with his presence being there, that this will stop. I actually wanted to add an update. So today, Moore announced that the Chicago police will hold a roll call at the site. So I'm assuming that means that there'll be a police presence there. But yeah, that'll start at 7 p.m. tonight, but he will not be there. He'll be out of town.
So while he was live streaming his campout on Facebook, you could actually hear shots being fired?
Yeah, you could hear some shots being fired in the background there. And two people were shot, I believe.
Wow.
With serious injuries and taken to hospital. You know, I feel a little bit bad myself. I should apologize to David Moore, because when I first heard about this, it reminded me, you know, some of us Chicagoans of a certain vintage remember Jane Byrne when she was the mayor going, I think, and living in Cabrini Green for a while. Yes. A lot of people thought that was a stunt. You know, was this a stunt or not? Only he knows what's in, you know, his mind and what his intentions were. But when shots are being fired while you're live streaming, while you're being camped out there, it illustrates the point, I think, that he was trying to make. And I think he said he had an aunt or another relative that lived there and got so fed up that she left precisely that area.
Yeah.
And so I think he's drawn attention to the issue, which is maybe the first step.
Mm-hmm. He made headlines the week before, right? Last week, getting into a verbal altercation with the First Ward Alderman, Daniel Espada, telling him, quote, if you slap me, I'm going to hit you with a bat. If you hit me with a bat, I'm going to shoot you with a gun.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new low for the city council, where we've seen a lot of crazy stuff happening.
Meanwhile, he's embarking on a protest to end violence.
Right. It's ironic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the use of parliamentary maneuvers in city council, we've only seen more and more in passing administrations. And it was clear that La Spada blocking Moore's attempt to get ShotSpotter's future in the control of city council hands is not something that sat well with him. So then he blocked a measure to bring more affordable housing to La Spada's ward, which is something people usually in the city council sort of, you know, you can decide what development looks like in your ward. And then came out and clearly said, like, this is, you know, in retaliation, which, and I'm not trying to be bogus in here or mince his words, because I hear what he's saying, you know, and I knew how he was saying it. But if he truly wants to look at the scope of why violence, why open air drug markets take place in communities like Inglewood, North Lawndale, Garfield Park, places that we all at this table at least know have been hardest hit by divestment in so many of the ways we talked about in our earlier conversation about reparations and the harms done to Black Chicago. But he'd also know that violence, some of it has a sort of retaliation cycle involved in it. You do something to my homies, I'm going to do something to your homies. You do something to my homies. So his exact words, not only talking about retaliation, but upping the scale of violence, shows that even on a metaphorical level, he understands how violence works. And so this idea of being deterrent, whether by camping out in the vacant lot, whether putting a police presence, doesn't get to the heart of the issue in mind that violence in many ways is cyclical, that it takes long-term strategy to move away from it. And even his rhetoric hints at that. And so his actions, while again, in his heart, and in my heart, I want less gun violence. I want less people harmed by drug abuse in our communities. But I think live streaming on Facebook in a tent, I think it's more political stunt than anything. Mm.
Yeah, I see where it's going. I'm glad, Jacoby, that you brought up ShotSpotter, because that issue, he's an alderman of an area that does have relatively high crime, or one of the highest rates of crime in the city. And then he looks at his ward and he says, well, I want to have basically aldermanic prerogative like we do over real estate, over ShotSpotter. Mm-hmm. And we have a mayor that came in and said, I'm going to get rid of ShotSpotter. Right. Now he's waffled, or whatever you want to call it, or phasing it out through the summer. But there are aldermen that want it to happen. And so let's be real. What he's actually saying there, and I think he said it in this many words, the alderman, Moore, was, I've got white progressives like La Spada, who's basically from Bucktown, Wicker Park area, coming down here from the hipster highway, from Milwaukee Avenue, coming to the south side and telling us that we can't have ShotSpotter here. Yeah. And we want to use any tool necessary. Hey, I don't want to reopen the whole ShotSpotter thing. Yeah, here.
No, and I'm not even going against Moore for saying that, because he's right. White progressives, white liberals, white conservatives across the aisle have for too long exhibited a violent paternalism over black communities. However, he's missing out on the organizers in his very backyard, folks like Michelle, who want more alternatives to police. And he's also forgetting that his ward also has some of the highest concentration of ShotSpotter, and that isn't tragically saving people from gun violence. He has some of the highest concentration of traffic stops. He has some of the highest concentration of jump out boys and unmarked police cars and arrests. So, like, these things are not stopping gun violence. So if we're not taking long-term strategy versus these sort of Facebook Live and just sort of blaming the white man in Logan Square, which, again, I'm not completely against. Like, come on, bro. That's disrespectful to the black organizers in Inglewood working every day for more substantive change.
Mm-hmm. Let's shift to some other city council news. The chair of its ethics committee, 47th Ward Alderman Matt Martin, made headlines this week. Briefly fill us in there, Dan.
Yeah, what he's trying to do is create a system of public financing, which, you know, might be more common, I think, in other countries than it is even in the U.S. But he's got a plan here. It's quite detailed. I don't know if it's going anywhere, but to replace, you know, the pay-to-play system that
we
have.
Tell us how you really feel, Dan.
Well, I don't want to be cynical. I mean, somebody has to try for anything to happen, but it seems like an uphill fight. We can discuss the odds after we talk about what he's really trying to get at here is the problem of pay to play politics in this state. We see it, you know, we've written about it for decades in zoning, for instance, in real estate matters, where people come in and give money to developers. There are certain limits in the ethics code, but again, there are always loopholes and ways to get around that. So if you're trying to get at, you know, as Jacoby put it, some kind of systemic issues like the influence of money in politics, you have to have another system. And so if people want to opt in to and can qualify for public funding of campaigns, then there would be some public money to back it up, and which would limit the ability of outsiders to put a ton of money into the campaigns. People who have a direct personal interest that they're putting ahead of the public's interest.
So Mayor Johnson's expressed support for publicly financed elections in the past, but hasn't been too active on Martin's ordinance.
Right. Well, you know, it's another thing where
it's going to be interesting to see if he fully backs it.
There's a couple things. I mean, this is public money. That's where it's coming from, you know, and there's not a ton of money for all the things that we want. There's shortfalls every year in CPS, in city government, in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, they were, I don't remember the exact math, but they were talking about, I think, 0.1% of the city budget. So if the city budget's $16 billion, it would have been something like $16 million for this program. And now they've pared it back to, I think, something like $10 million over 4 years. And they're talking about just the city council races as opposed to mayoral races, where we've seen people like Rahm Emanuel or even Paul Vallis in the last campaign raise huge amounts of money from business interests, as well as people from outside the city who may have business interests here, or, you know, in Rahm's case, who knew his brother, you know, a Hollywood super agent.
Right.
These are huge amounts of money that are warping the ability of people to compete whatsoever if they don't have that sort of donor base.
Right. Let's transition to a couple of school stories before we take a pause here. Candidates lined up Monday morning to submit the necessary 1,000 signatures to get on the November 5th ballot for Chicago's first ever elected school board. How significant is this, Jacoby, in your view? I mean, do you think that this could have a big impact on schools in Chicago?
I do think it's a big deal. For decades, we've seen largely the mayor control what the agenda looks like inside the school board. Even Brandon Johnson, when he got in, I'd argue, as it comes to the school board and his agenda on education, it's probably been something he's been swiftest on, how quickly he replaced the school board and how quickly they've asserted their agenda around policing schools, around investing in neighborhood schools. At one point, it sparked a conversation that all the way went to the state about, oh my God, are they about to defund private schools and charter schools? And so it's clear how important education is to the city of Chicago when you see CPS and CTU going down to the state together. But we just talked about campaign financing. And I think another elected body, you know, makes us, again, have caution. Not to say it is not important for us to elect these people who are deciding what's happening inside of Chicago public schools. But I do think it's important for us to recognize, you know, how easy are we making it for, you know, for this process to be inclusive? You know, are we making it easy for parents who got to work 9 to 5, maybe 9 to 9 every day to participate? Are we making it easy for teachers? Are we making it easy for low income folks who have, you know, who care about the schools in their community? And so I wonder, as this process goes on, what we learn from 2024 when we're only electing 10 people until 2026 when we're electing the entire school board, what that process looks like. But I am excited to see what a fully elected school board can accomplish after, again, so many years of, you know, whoever is elected as mayor, that they're pretty much going to act along with them, which, again, we saw when we closed 50 public schools. This was a directive that was voted on by the school board, was largely top down from the mayor's office. And so moving forward to see how independent will they be from what city council wants, what CPS, CTU, the mayor's office wants.
Yeah.
We got a lot of interesting questions moving forward.
Just to clarify, come November, Chicago voters will only get to choose a candidate from their district for the school board.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Another quick school story here. 3 Chicago public schools are getting new names. Tonia, tell us about this.
Yeah, so this comes after the Sun-Times investigation a few years ago that found that a lot of schools had the names of white people and majority black neighborhoods. And some of those folks, like, for instance, colonizers. So looking at Ukrainian Village, Christopher Columbus will now become Ruth Bader Ginsburg after the former Supreme Court Justice. Melville Fuller Elementary in Bronzeville will be James Farmer Elementary School. And there's a note here that Fuller upheld racial segregation in the Plessy versus Ferguson case. Mm-hmm. And even in Logan Square, which was named after James Monroe, the 5th president, will be Logan Square Elementary. But to circle back to the Fuller Elementary School one, it's just kind of a little ironic, you know, a neighborhood like Bronzeville that was kind of the home of where black people migrated from and were forced to live in, had an elementary school that had the name of someone that is opposite, you know, of that neighborhood, not representative of the neighborhood.
Let's let that sink in.
There was a major change in the Illinois Republican Party this week. Dan, get us up to speed.
Right before the Republican National Convention, 90 miles up the road in Milwaukee, the Illinois Republican Party, yeah, there used to be a thing like that that was a real powerful thing. It's Don Tracy. He's a gentleman from a lawyer, I believe, from the Springfield area. I first interviewed him when Bruce Rauner, the last Republican governor of Illinois, had him on the Illinois Gaming Board as a chairman. Mm-hmm. After Rauner lost power to the Democrat J.B. Pritzker, who's still our governor, Mr. Tracy continued in politics, becoming the head of the Illinois Republican Party. But it's not easy, whether you're Democrat or Republican these days, to hold the party together. You have extremes in each party.
Yeah.
And although even running centrist candidates has not really gotten the Republicans very far, you know, outside of Rauner and former Senator Kirk, I'd say, and some small parts of the state, you know, you have a party that here closer to Chicago, maybe in the suburbs, is more moderate. Those folks didn't last because there's a tremendous pull to the right. Mm-hmm. Especially downstate, you know, especially central, southern Illinois, pretty much everywhere but the Chicago area. And even in some parts of the Chicago area within that party, there's a huge pull to the right. Not coincidentally, since, you know, Donald Trump ran and became president in 2016. So, yeah, it's hard to keep the party together and the centrifugal forces, I think, just...
So he's resigning.
Yeah, he's Donald gone.
Tracy. In his resignation letter, Tracy said his decision was in part because he spent more time dealing with infighting among fellow Republicans than fighting Democrats. Ooh. All right, moving on.
There you go.
Milwaukee is 3 weeks away from hosting that RNC, as you mentioned there, Dan. Now, word came out this week, Jacoby, that Donald Trump actually intended to stay at the Trump Hotel here in Chicago, 2 hours south of Milwaukee. How did that go over with people in Wisconsin?
Rightfully so. They were upset. You know, it was reported that he was once again calling a city, you know, terrible names. I think the word was horrible.
Yes.
But I imagine under his breath or behind closed doors, if these were truly his thoughts, he probably said some worse things. Because I imagine Milwaukee, like Chicago, these are not the places where the most of his base in these states live.
But he likes to stay in his own hotels.
Yeah, I'm sure that was the driving force. He wanted to stay in Chicago. But he also know we don't want him in here either. Last time he was here, they kind of ran him out of one of his own rallies. But they quickly let people know with the understanding that Wisconsin is an important battleground state that he will, in fact, be staying in Wisconsin. And so I think that's a win for us here in Chicago.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you mentioned former President Donald Trump calling Milwaukee a, quote, horrible city. Well, just in time for the RNC, a Milwaukee brewer is actually releasing a new beer. It's called Not So, in parentheses, Horrible City IPA.
Come on.
Capitalism.
It's a great time for beer.
A city where Giannis can't be on
it.
Great
beer. All right.
True.
Let's step away from politics and head to the Riverwalk, the Chicago Riverwalk, which could look a little different in the future. What is 6th Ward Alderman William Hall looking into, Jacoby?
Well, at this point, he's suggesting that the city wants to raise more revenue and maybe advertising is the way to go. He believes that the Riverwalk, Chicago parks, could be home, the future home for billboards. Right now, billboards are prohibited within 100 feet of waterways, including the Chicago River. That's according to the city's zoning code. Also, large parks have a 400-foot protection from billboards that could be seen from inside the park, with smaller parks under 2 acres having a 100-foot barrier. I will say his pitch was very Don Draper, right? Very manly. It was just like, hey, why not put Simone Biles running or exercising on the Riverwalk?
These are electronic billboards, right?
Right, as people are downtown. Why not have a littering campaign in the park? But, you know, that's all well and dandy, but that's not what's going to happen. You're going to see T-Mobile ads in the park. You're going to see Taffy ads on the Riverwalk. And I have T-Mobile.
Yeah.
I love Laffy Taffy. My new dentist told me I need to maybe push back on it. But this is one of those things that I don't care the pictures.
Like, people still eat Laffy Taffy?
Yeah, I don't care the pictures selling. Oh. You know, that's not what the ultimate product would look like. And so just kind of selling off the parks and the Riverwalk to advertisers seems
short-sighted. Well, we know the Riverwalk is a popular spot for locals and the tourists. I mean, do you think, Tonya, that electronic billboards would change that vibe?
Depending on what it is, I think.
If it's all local ads.
Yeah, I think so.
If it's King Rello, right? If it's Hot Crunchy Curls. Like things that are in Chicago.
How do you feel about
Joe Fresh? I'm with that.
I don't like it. It's tacky. I mean, they need money, but you know, people
got to bring in the money
with the Amazon stuff in the park. I mean,
they put them things right on the sidewalk, though. Them lockers were right in the walkway.
I don't think this is going to be any better. Sounds worse, in fact.
Oh my goodness. All right, many Americans took time to mark Juneteenth on Wednesday, a holiday celebrating the end of slavery. It marks when enslaved African Americans in Galveston, Texas, specifically, when they finally found out that they were free. Tonya and Jacoby, I mean, did you attend any notable Juneteenth celebrations around town? Looking at you, Tonya. I know you did some.
I didn't. I decided to rest.
So did I.
I decided to rest. I, you know, put out a lot of big stories this week and I just wanted to rest.
That you did, and that's why you're here. Mm-hmm. We've been watching.
Thank you.
You've been working.
No, after a busy weekend in these streets, I also rested on Juneteenth.
Yeah.
And I watched the pop out, Ken and Friends, streaming live on my TV and watched Not
referring
Like Us.
Referring to Kendrick Lamar's big concert.
Kendrick Lamar and all of his L.A. homies.
Was that on Amazon Prime?
Yeah, one of the biggest concerts in hip-hop history with him playing his seminal number one record, diss track, Not Like Us. Five times
against
in a row.
Against my fellow countryman, Drake.
Hey, man, you Canadians is taking L's right now. I don't know if I would have mentioned that if I was you.
It's not her fault.
These are my people. They already know I'm Canadian.
Fellow Torontonian. No,
these are my friends.
Left it alone for a while. Left it alone.
I was working. I assigned a reporter. I was an editor that day, actually, for the first time since my senior year of high school, I think. And I assigned a reporter to go to... with a mayor, actually. First, there was an event on the west side with kids in North Lawndale giving tours of the neighborhoods. They've been doing that for a few years. There's a good story about it in the Sun-Times. Then the same reporter, Courtney Kippers, went out to where some people were marking Juneteenth by helping people clean out their basements, demolish basements that flooded on the west side in the western suburbs almost a year ago, exactly. Remember, I think it's a really undercovered disaster, actually, that affected thousands of people when we had basement backups primarily. And I think a lot of people are still struggling to recover from that a year later. And some people thought, you know, Juneteenth, a lot of people look at Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday as a day of service. And some people were looking at Juneteenth
in the same way,
I think. And that was one issue that we've covered a lot at WBZ, but I think has been generally undercovered.
Any Juneteenth related events that you all know of coming up this weekend that you can share?
I actually did see something, but I feel like it's going to take me a second to find it. I feel like there was something.
Well, while you're looking for that, here's something we found out this morning that I just had to throw in here. I mean, anyone driving to the Indiana Dunes or Michigan's Harbor Country, they're also going to appreciate this story. Now, a lawsuit filed on Tuesday accuses the company operating the Chicago Skyway of overcharging users anywhere from 10 cents to $1.20 per trip, depending on the size of the vehicle. Now, overcharges allegedly totaled an estimated $3 million over the five-year period ending in March. What? That Skyway is pretty expensive.
Well, the reason it's expensive is because it was privatized. You know, it's not just like the Illinois Tollway or some public body. It did belong to the city. The city did used to charge a toll. And then, what was it? I don't remember if this was a 75-year deal or a 99-year deal, because there was also the parking meters around the same time. But we're still only, you know, 20 years in, only a fraction of the way into this privatization deal. It's changed hands. It was a Spanish conglomerate that had it at first, that was the winning bidder. They paid a big amount up front so that they could jack the rates over time. But there are limits to that. And this lawsuit is focused on whether they've exceeded those limits, but it's expensive. It's gotten more expensive, but a lot of people like it because it saves you time. It's better than, you know, going down at 41, or some of the other ways.
I took a trip back from St. Louis the other day and I was like, wow, why was that such a big jump? We'll definitely keep an eye on that story. Jacoby, you got anything for us?
Yes, it's not Juneteenth related particularly, but not me. We and the CBA Coalition are having their second annual CBA Summit tomorrow from 12 to 2 at Hyde Park Academy. Mayor Brandon Johnson and Alder Desmond Yancey are supposed to be in attendance. Mm-hmm. And so if we are talking about housing protections for Black folks who are living in neighborhoods like Woodlawn, South Shore, Hyde Park, that's a place you want to be.
Okay. Before we go, quick cicada update, because, you know, we gotta. So in the coming weeks, millions of the little buggers are going to decompose. Tonya is cheering. Yes. Two fists in the air, not just one. Now, it makes for great fertilizer, but it can also be quite smelly. So if you're out walking around and you're wondering, what is that aroma? Now you know. And you're welcome.
Decaying cicadas.
Right now I'm out of time, but I do want to know what you're working on next week. So if we can do the fastest roundtable ever, with Dan.
We're waiting for a Supreme Court decision that could define, you know, what's bribery, and there's a lot of bribery cases floating around
and
in
you're
Illinois
on it.
Politics. We're on it. Our team is the government politics team at BEZ is on it.
Nice. Tonya?
Yes, we recently launched a reframing crime narrative story, mm-hmm. Series, I should say, and I'll be working on the next story in that series.
And we'll be keeping an eye. Jacoby?
Monday, we're sitting down with Block Club Chicago's Madison Saavedra to talk about how Biden's latest executive order trying to lessen the number of asylum seekers crossing at the U.S.-Mexico border impacts asylum seekers here in Chicago.
Mm. All right, my thanks to Jacoby Cochran of CityCast Chicago, Tonya Hill of The Tribe, and WBEZ's Dan Mahal. Halopolis. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guthman. It was edited by Meha Ahmed and mixed by Max Lubers. We know how overwhelming the news can get, and that's why we give you these top stories of the week, all under an hour. If you like this recap as much as we do, please subscribe and tell your friends about us. Thanks for listening and enjoy your weekend.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.